ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Śrīmad-Bhāgavatam, second canto, chapter 10, Bhāgavatam is the answer to all questions. Text 26. Nira-vidyata Śrīṣṇa Vai Praja-ānanda Amrita-arthina Upastha
Asit
Kāmanam Priyam
Ubhaya
Ashrayam Niravidyata Śrīṣṇovai Prajānandam Ritārtina Upastha Asit Kāmanam Ubhayashrayam Niravidyata Śrīṣṇovai Prajānandam Ritārtina Upastha Asit Kāmanam Priyam Tad Ubhayashrayam. Translation. Thereupon, for sexual pleasure, begetting offspring, and tasting heavenly nectar, the Lord developed the genitals, and thus there is the genital organ and its controlling deity, the Prajapati. The object of sexual pleasure and the controlling deity are under the control of the genitals of the Lord. Purport. Srila Prabhupada. The heavenly pleasure for the conditioned soul is sexual pleasure, and this pleasure is tasted by the genitals. The woman is the object of sexual pleasure, and both the sense perception of sexual pleasure and the woman are controlled by the Prajapati, who is under the control of the Lord's genitals. The impersonalist must know from this verse that the Lord is not impersonal, for he has his genitals on which all the pleasurable objects of sex depend. No one would have taken the trouble to maintain children if there were no taste of heavenly nectar by means of sexual intercourse. This material world is created to give the conditioned souls a chance for rejuvenation, for going back home, back to Godhead. And therefore, generation of the living being is necessary for upkeep of the purpose of creation. Sexual pleasure is an impetus for such action. And as such, one can serve the Lord in the act of such sexual pleasure. The service is counted when the children born of such sexual pleasure are properly trained in God consciousness. The whole idea of material creation is to revive the dormant God consciousness of the living entity. In forms of life other than the human form, sexual pleasure is prominent without any motive of service for the mission of the Lord. But in the human form of life, the conditioned soul can render service to the Lord by creating progeny suitable for the attainment of salvation. One can beget hundreds of children and enjoy the celestial pleasure of sexual intercourse, provided he is able to train the children in God consciousness. Otherwise, begetting children is on the level of the swine. Rather, the swine is more expert than the human being, because the swine can beget a dozen piglets at a time, whereas the human being can give birth to only one at a time. So one should always remember that the genitals, sexual pleasure, the woman, and the offspring are all related in the service of the Lord. And one who forgets this relationship in the service of the Supreme Lord becomes subjected to the threefold miseries of material existence by the laws of nature. Perception of sexual pleasure is there, even in the body of the dog. but there is no sense of God consciousness. The human form of life is distinct from that of the dog by the perception of God consciousness. Om again in Tirunandasya, Nanjana Shlape, Chakshundi Tamana, Tazumai Shri Guru. Here we are relishing Srila Prabhupada's mercy on us in the form of such wonderful purports. In Prabhupada's purports, he's capable of giving us the heights of Goloka Vrindavan nectar by giving us the essence of the books by the Goswamis. He said that once, that he's given us the cream of all the Vaishnav Shastras in the form of the Bhaktivedanta purports. Therefore, if someone is eligible to taste such nectar, and actually everyone is eligible to read the highest nectar in Prabhupada's books because it's there, but if someone has longings to concentrate on this Goloka Vrindavan nectar, Srila Prabhupada's books have everything. He explained once in Los Angeles that his books are like a pharmacy in which they contain everything for different kinds of patients. Actually, he pointed out that even in his own books, you have to be careful because there are things that may not be meant for young students or new patients. So just see the difference in Prabhupada's vision of his books and sometimes what bewildered devotees have as their vision. Sometimes bewildered devotees think that, well, Prabhupada's books don't have everything, and when we get to that high level, then we've got to kind of get something else. We're missing something. And Prabhupada purposely left his work undone, or by the arrangement of Krishna, the work was undone. So now we have to look elsewhere than Prabhupada's books in order to get the things that are necessary for us to be situated in Goloka Vrindavan. But I remember Prabhupada right here in Los Angeles saying, my books have everything, so much so that without proper guidance, you can misuse my books by concentrating on the confidential things. So there seems to be a variance in vision here between the author of the books and sometimes what his followers are thinking. Prabhupada is saying, I've got everything there. The heights of Goloka Vrindavan are there, but you can misuse it. Meanwhile, others are thinking, sometimes, well, Prabhupada's books, they're good for introducing Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada is sometimes referred to in a condescending way as, he was the revolutionary who broke down all the barriers in the West so bhakti could be spread. All glories to him. But now that that's done, now that the barriers are knocked down, someone else, some others, something else is required to give the higher taste. So all glories to his divine grace for doing the footwork, and now more sublime efforts are required. Prabhupada never said that. He said, it's all there to such an extent that you could even go astray just using his books. And that's indeed what the famous GBC, Gopi Bhava Club here in L.A. did. They were not going outside to anyone. They were not using other books. They were using Prabhupada's books, and he still got everyone. At least they recognized, the famous Gopi Bhava Club back then in the 70s, that Prabhupada's books had everything there. Give them that credit. They would just have secret meetings in the BBT building, that building, I think it's a doctor's office now behind, you know, the present BBT building. And, you know, at night they would come and they'd get out the TLC, they'd get out the Krishna book, and they'd only read certain sections. They would read just about the Rasa dance, and they would just read the sections of teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the beauty of Krishna, like that. And so that's all they were using. There was no question of thinking that there were other books they needed or they had to go elsewhere. They were just using Prabhupada's books, and still Prabhupada got heavy with them. So our point we're emphasizing today is not so much that Prabhupada got heavy with them for misusing his books. But the fact is, Prabhupada was confident, yes, indeed, my books do have the highest taste, but you may not be ready for everything in my own books. So as time goes on, things permutate and transform. So now we have the latest version, which is, well, actually, the highest things are not there in Prabhupada's books to such an extent that you can perfect your spiritual life, therefore other things are necessary. And Prabhupada was very good at smashing Western concepts. He was the revolutionary. But to get the secret nectar of Vrindavan or Navadvipa, well, then something else must be necessary. So our point in bringing up this incident in the 70s is to show that Prabhupada was confident. Everything is there in my books. Those devotees knew it, but Prabhupada was saying, you've misused. You're jumping too high with my own books. He said, they're like a pharmacy. Everything is there for all kinds of patients. This is the vision Prabhupada had of his books. And back then, we all accepted it like that. So, we need to take deep looks into Prabhupada's books, and those deep looks are the product of committed devotional service. Now, what gets in the way of committed devotional service? We're finding that out in this verse and purport. Prabhupada's books give us the heights of Goloka Vrindavan Rasa, and part of that delivery is to expose the impediments of material existence. Both these things are glorification of Krishna. But what is the main reason why we are in material life? To taste so-called different varieties of sexual pleasure in different types of bodies on different planets. That's the story. For that, we'll sign up for repeated birth and death. Prabhupada sometimes uses the phrase conceding to a life of sex. But, all right, I'll do it. I'll sign up for that. Yeah. I'll take what comes. When you concede to a life of sex, you are also conceding to repeated birth and death. But that we don't see. We just see the limited situation. I have some sex desire. Here's a sense object. Here's a woman. Here's a man. They go for it. And hey, you know, it happens sometimes, it's part of life. One householder in Australia was telling me that recently. Hey, you know, man, it's just part of life, you know? Yes, it is part of life, but what kind of life? That we have to decide. Is it conditioned life or is it spiritual life? Conditioned life means, Prabhupada says so nicely in yesterday's purport, they have taken it for granted that this life, as presently manifested under the conditions of material nature, is all in all for enjoying the highest amount of sense gratification. So what you call life means a situation manifested under conditions. That's why the phrase conditioned soul is there. We have to think deeply about these things. Sometimes we just rattle it off. Conditioned soul, Jiva Buddha. Yeah. What does it mean to be a conditioned soul? It means I'm searching for pleasure which is bound up by conditions. How can it actually be pleasure? At every step of the way, some condition is checking my so-called pleasure. My so-called pleasure is dependent on some condition. But that's okay. Ahamkara Vimudhatma. Mudha, you all know, means fool. And Vimudha, and that V-I is in front of a word in Sanskrit, that intensifies it. So Vimudha, super fool. Because I am a super fool, I'm thinking, never mind the conditions, I shall enjoy. You become so enthralled and absorbed in your own enjoying desires. It all seems natural. It all seems appropriate. You've got it flowing through your veins, so to speak. It's coming out of your pores, and it's yours. Therefore, you feel like a whole person. But actually, that lust that flows through the veins and comes out the pores is an infection. You would not feel very happy seeing boils erupt over your all over your body and stuff come out, fluids come out. You wouldn't be proud of that. But that is what sex desire is like. It is a disease. It is a contamination. It comes out and causes problems. Now, you can actually blame Krishna for the origin of everything. But when you blame Krishna, you have to know that in Krishna, all desires are handled perfectly, and we also have the same chance as parts of Krishna to experience perfect desire, but we are misusing our independence. Therefore, our desires bring problems, are problems, and are the result of problems. This is the cycle of complexity we were speaking a bit about yesterday. You cannot just see your desire. Let's just take sex desire. You just can't see it as a thing of its own that's kind of existing right now. You have to expand your vision. We like to mention, think about when you were a kid. Just like I was watching a little boy dancing in front of the Gornitai during the kirtan. He was just happily dancing. Now, he must be about 9 or 10. So Savasco over and gave him some nuts and raisins like that. And the boy's happily dancing. Now, you look at that boy and you know, in a few years, something's going to hit him. Why? Why can't he remain like that? Well, the four Kumaras, they did that. They said, hey, we're not growing up any further than young boys because we know what happens when you reach a certain age. We don't want it. But this young boy, he's dancing in front of the deities. But in 3 or 4 years, he's going to be afflicted. Why? Involuntarily, something's going to be forced upon him, which is going to take over his whole life. So many of us can remember what the teenage years were like when your blood first began to boil. Such a bewildering time. Spoiling your peace and innocence as a child. Now just think if it never happened, if puberty never struck you. Just think how peaceful your life would be. No puberty, no sex desire. Yeah, you see how young boys and girls play with no consideration of gender differences. The freedom of that would be yours without puberty and the hormones. Actually, that freedom can be there in Krishna consciousness, but we have to work to revive our freedom. We have to work to transform ourselves to regain our natural state of seeing everything in connection to Krishna. Then there's no lust. When you see everything in connection to Krishna. So, the puberty is there, the hormones are there because of your past life. In your past life and the life before that, countless births, you have woven a web of desire, which is manifest as this current body. Not only your physical body, but also your mental impressions are the result of associating material nature in previous lives. So your body and mind are this whole cobweb of residue from previous lives. And that's what you're struggling with. Therefore, there's no such thing as an innocent childhood. Simply, the body is waiting for the proper time to hit you with your karmic reactions. And part of your karmic reactions is puberty. It nails you because you, in your past life, did something that sets you up for that kind of thing. It's packed into the body like a time bomb. Now, you have to widen your vision even more than that. Not simply to see what you were like when you were a little kid before puberty struck, but you have to be able to see life after life you've been involved with a complexity of desires. One desire doesn't exist on its own. It's linked with so many other desires. That's why we need the process of devotional service. Because if you stop one desire for some kind of material thing, hundreds of other material desires manifest. It's like trying to catch a mouse that's, let's say, running under a rug. You try to push down here on the rug, the mouse runs somewhere else under the rug, you push down there. So if you just have a program of trying to stop your material desires, let's focus on this desire, I'm going to really uproot it, it'll come out another way. So our program is to engage the desires in Krishna's service. When we desire simply Krishna's pleasure, that is the perfection of desire, and that does two things. It purifies the whole complexity of material desires we're possessing in our body and mind. And it also establishes us at Krishna's lotus feet. The positive and negative are taken care of simultaneously. Krishna is the origin of desire. So yes, you can blame Krishna for sex desire. That's what this verse is telling you. The Lord has genitals. He's not impersonal. Because He has genitals, He has desires, therefore we have desires. But the similarity ends there. Krishna has no problems whatsoever in eternal, unlimited sense gratification. Just think about that as the definition of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No problem whatsoever in the eternal, unlimited pursuance of sense gratification. And what is our situation? Birth after birth, nothing but problems trying to gratify our senses. In Krishna, the romance urge is there perfectly. In fact, that perfection continuously increases. It doesn't even remain the same level of perfection. It gets sweeter and fresher. Prabhupada, I was hearing him yesterday, gave a very nice definition of why Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He said, just look at Krishna's affairs with the gopis. They're going on eternally, and there's never a breakup. The relationship never breaks apart because they're, divorced or they're tired of one another. Now, who can do that? Who can have eternal romance with the never a breakup eternally? That's actually what we want. No one wants the pain and the inconvenience of relationships. Everyone wants eternal romance where everything just works out perfectly and there's just a constant increase in the flavors and the relish and the experience of one another. That's the dream. For Krishna, it's not a dream, it's reality. For us, it's a nightmare. So just think about this definition Prabhupada's giving for why Krishna is God. He, with his gopis, eternally has romance and no breakup. No divorce. They're always together, even when separated. In fact, the highest secret of Gaudiya Vaishnavism is love of Godhead in separation, Vipralamba Seva. When the gopis and Krishna are separated, they are actually more together. That's why Krishna left the gopis in Vrindavan. He told them, there's no way I can repay you for your service even in the lifetime of Brahma. Krishna's speaking using conventional material terms, the lifetime of Brahma, because he's appearing within the material world. And just to make the point clear, he's saying, even if I had the lifetime of Brahma, 311 trillion years, I could not repay you for your service. Therefore, just be satisfied with your service. Everything is up front in Krishna consciousness. The Lord is saying to his topmost devotees, just be satisfied with your service. But actually, he did repay them. How? He left them. By Krishna's leaving the gopis, he created a more intense situation for them to be absorbed in. So this is the perfection of romance. When the beloved leaves the object of his affection, the object of his affection becomes even more overwhelmed by love. Krishna can do that. Whereas we know that in our foolish attempts at romance, during the times when there's actually some deep appreciation and, oh, I can't live without you, you know how long that lasts. When that's actually there, when there's separation, you can't stand it. I remember what it was like in my young days. When you finally found someone, it was really clicking, it was all working, it was like a symphony in the air, and, everything was just, that brief moment, when Maya sets you up. So, to be separated at that time, it's so painful. It's really agony. But for Krishna and the gopis, it seems like agony, but it's the sweetest, most intense, most wonderful experience. love of Krishna, love of the gopis, and separation. We were discussing that on Ramchandra's appearance day. And how, on the one level, Sita Ram's pastimes are excruciatingly painful. Look at the trouble Ram had to go through just to maintain Sita. Look at all the ordeals he had to go through to be a responsible husband. It looked like, from one point of view, that he was attached and henpecked like anything. And even after Sita was reunited with Ram, and Ram was touring his kingdom one night disguised, so he could see what the citizens were really talking about him. You know, every good king does that. He's concerned, what do the people really think, where they're really at? So, in the Vedic culture, a king has spies, and he himself may go out disguised to hear what's going on. This is legitimate. Why? Not just for to maintain his power. No, he knows that I'm simply trying to serve the people with good government. So maybe the people aren't being straightforward with me. It happens sometimes, right? Sometimes you don't tell the leader everything, you know? You just jive the boot, yes, yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right, right, right. Meanwhile, you know, that guy, taking away my apartment or taking away my, you know, maintenance. So, Ram, he wanted to find out what the citizens were actually thinking. Of course, he's the omniscient supreme personality guy, but these are leelas. Whatever Krishna does, it's for enjoyment. He doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't have to go out sneaking around and hear what the citizens are saying. But it's fun. So Ram did it. It's fun. So he overheard one sudra, not even a high-class person who you should take seriously, but a sudra, a laborer, talking, criticizing, upbraiding his wife. You cheap woman, where have you been? You've been out. I don't know where you're going. What kind of man, which man are you hanging out with? Do you think I'm like Ram, whose wife could stay with another man and then he takes her back? No way. I'm not henpecked like that. So, Ram, Sita Ram Leela, could look like that from a material point of view. And Shukadeva Goswami acknowledges that vision is possible. And indeed, Lord Ram was purposely acting in that kind of way to teach a lesson that male-female attachment brings nothing but problems. If you want to be attached, you have to pay the price. What is the price for attachment? Problems. I remember once Prabhupada explaining very graphically. This is why sometimes other Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they can't understand Prabhupada. Because one minute he's talking about Radha Krishna Leela, the next minute he's just really getting down into the explanation of material nature in such graphic terms, you know. So they think, oh, he's Swamiji, you're Swamiji, he was speaking to beginners. They don't understand the mercy and compassion of Prabhupada, and he could soar like that on all levels, showing how everything is connected to Krishna. So, I remember Prabhupada saying, he challenged, you take any material attachment, anything, and I'll show you that eventually he will kick you in the face. That's frightening when you think about it. In some ways, it's frightening. Any material attachment is going to kick you in the face? No, no. Yeah, there'll be some problems, but there'll also be some pleasure. We like to dream. We have a vision. It's going to be all right. But if we look the thing into the eye as it is, we can see I'm going to get kicked in the face. So Ram is demonstrating, look what I had to go through from a certain point of view with Sita. Look at all the trouble just to get her back. Isn't this troublesome? Isn't this a bit of an ordeal? But actually, there's another angle, too. It's not that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is ever suffering or going through material anxieties. No. He is the perfection of desire. Therefore, Sita's relationship with Ram was, once again, love of God and separation. They wanted to experience that, to pine for the lover, to pine away. In material life, that's agony. Ladies know it. Men, they don't admit it, but they also know it. The ladies immediately admit it. You know. Where is he? Where is my beloved? I can't live without him. Won't he call? You know, there are times when things are like that. The men, they won't publicly admit, but, you know, in their hearts, they're, where's my woman? Where's the sense crack? You know, I wish she was here right now. You know, men are more concerned with the physiology, and the ladies get into the emotions. But in any case, the separation is painful. The men know, when you've got a good object of sense gratification, you can't get to it when you want it. It's misery. Bad enough if you don't have a good object of sense gratification, but when you know, I've got a good object of sense gratification, I've got a good woman, but where is she now? And I... Yeah. I remember what it was like a few decades ago. It was misery, you know? And it's not that when you're in Maya, you can say to yourself, well, she'll be back in a month, so, you know. No! You don't work like that under the mode of passion. Now! Where is she now? She's not here. Oh, man, this could have been such a good day. This could have been such a good night. All the conditions are right. Where is she? It's agony. But for Sita Ram, it was the highest pleasure. They wanted to taste that highest pleasure of separation. In this way, you can see how Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He takes the most troublesome things and not excels at them. There's not even a drop of material distress. Not one drop. Just like in Rathayatra. That is all about desire. That's the real meaning of Rathayatra. Desire. Whose desire? Krishna and Radharani's desire. Lord Caitanya would always quote a verse before the Rath cart while dancing. These are the same moonlit nights, the same fragrance of the malati flowers is there. The sweet breezes are blowing from the Kadamba forest. Where is our situation in Vrindavan? Although things are satisfactory here, Radharani is saying, it's not the same. I want to go back to Vrindavan. The Lord Chaitanya would say that verse over and over again. And practically no one could understand what the meaning of this verse was, except for Sri Damodar, who would always recite other verses to augment the Lord's mood of being Radharani, feeling separated from Krishna. Rupa Goswami, he heard the verse one time when he came to Jagannath Puri, walking all the way from Vrindavan through Bengal. He came to Jagannath Puri, and there's a rock, and he heard Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reciting this verse. Immediately, Rupa Goswami composed another verse. Piyatsoyam Krishna Sahatchari Kurukshetra Malitas. Radharani's talking to her dear friend. My dear friend, now I'm with my same old dear friend Krishna here at Kurukshetra, but it's not the same. I want to go back to Vrindavan. That is my desire. I want to go back to the Jamuna River. So when Rupa Goswami composed that verse, Piyatsoyam, Lord Chaitanya said, how did you know my mood? Because Rupa Goswami wrote the verse on some palm leaf, stuck it in the roof of his hut, and went out to take a bath. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, saw this leaf protruding, pulled it down, looked at it. While he was reading it, Rupa Goswami came back, paid his full obeisances, dandavats, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Lord Chaitanya kind of mildly smacked him lovingly. How are you knowing my mind? And Sukh Damodar, he was also there. He said, look, there's only one way he could have understood your mind. That is, previously you bestowed your mercy on him, and he can see into your desires, into your affairs. So we also want to see into Krishna's desires, Krishna's affairs. Actually, in that same section, we'll conclude with this point, in that same section where Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami is talking about the intimate desires of the Lord, What purport does Prabhupada give? He says, a devotee should know the intimate desires of the Lord. What are his intimate desires? That he wants his name and fame spread to every town and village. These are the intimate desires of the Lord. Prabhupada doesn't write that these are the kind of marginal desires of the Lord, these are the inferior desires. No. Right in the midst of talking about Radharani's love for Krishna and the Lord's desires, Prabhupada's giving purports about the intimate desires of Lord Chaitanya to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So this is our heritage. This is our calling. And certainly the highest perfections will come to us by dedicating ourselves to Prabhupada's desires, which are Lord Chaitanya's desires, and that way we'll be free from the carnal, troublesome desires. So, maybe just one question. Oh, I know some of you have to go. Get in here. All right. Hare Krishna. Glory to Prabhupada.